This episode of the podcast is brought to you by my YouTube channel. Free yoga is how I got started on my incredible yoga journey, and I want to bring you the same practices and principles that inspired me to begin my practice. On my channel, you'll find workouts and fitness videos, yoga flows, meditations, wellness vlogs, and more. You can click the link in my bio to subscribe to my channel and support me and free online yoga. Welcome to Balance Your Life podcast. My name is Megan Farrell and I am the host of the show. This podcast is designed to inspire and empower you to start and maintain your own wellness journey so you can become the best version of yourself. Let's begin. Good morning. Happy Monday. Welcome back to another episode of Balance Your Life podcast. I am your host, Megan Farrell Gordon, and today we have quite the episode for you, especially if you are someone who struggles with chronic pain, or you know someone in your life who struggles with chronic pain. You're going to learn a lot from this episode. Today on the podcast, I am joined by Rick Olderman. Rick is a sports and orthopedic physical therapist with more than 25 years experience that specializes in helping people with chronic pain experience a pain-free life. He is one of the top professionals in the U.S. when it comes to understanding recurring injuries and chronic musculoskeletal pain. Rick wants to enhance quality of life by helping people fix their pain once and for all. On this episode, we talk about how people can eliminate pain naturally without surgery or medication, daily habits we do unintentionally that may cause strain and future problems for our muscles and joints. We also discuss different types of treatments people can use to help with chronic pain, how to identify patterns in your body that are leading to chronic pain, and so much more. I think you guys are going to really like today's podcast episode. Even if you're someone who doesn't struggle with chronic pain, I feel like I learned a lot in this episode about how I can do things to be preventative about potentially giving myself chronic pain down the road. Maybe I'm doing things that might lead to that. And I feel like regardless, some of us all know someone who has pain in their life. And now you can help them to live a pain-free life. So with that, please welcome Rick Olderman to the Balance Your Life podcast. I've always been super mindful of the products I put on my body as well as in my body. And when I got pregnant, I wanted to make sure I was taking everything I needed to support my pregnancy, which included taking a quality prenatal vitamin, and I chose Ritual to support me on my journey. What I really liked about the brand and their vitamin is that it's high quality and uses traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It's also non-GMO, project verified, soy-free, gluten-free, and vegan. It also has a citrus-enhanced capsule that's designed to be easy on the stomach so you can take it with or without food. Please note these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. I think it's so important to build a foundation while creating life, and to ensure I'm getting the right nutrients matters to me. Right now, Ritual is giving all Balance Your Life podcast listeners 10% off your first 3 months by going to ritual.com/Megan. That's ritual.com/MEGHAN for 10% off your first 3 months. Welcome to the show, Rick. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Megan. Appreciate it.
I would love if you could give a little bio of who you are and where in the world you are currently joining me from today.
Yeah, I'm a physical therapist. I specialize in solving chronic or nagging pain issues, and I'm here in Denver, Colorado.
Beautiful. I would love to back right up to the start of your journey. Why did you get into this line of work? Was this something you always knew you were going to get into, or was there a catalyst in your life that led you into working in this type of field?
Well, I've always been interested in medicine. And in college, I studied medicine, but reality kicked me in the rear end pretty quickly. And I realized I just wasn't cut out to get into medical school or anything like that. So I've shifted to science teaching, but I didn't really want to be a teacher. I traveled around for a while, a few years later, and discovered physical therapy, which, you know, I grew up on a farm in Ohio, so I had never even heard of a physical therapist. So I heard about this. I'm just like, oh, this sounds exactly, because I also enjoyed fitness. And so, and I was struggling with back pain at the time too. And so, I went into PT school hoping to not only solve my back pain, but also, you know, find a career that worked for me.
That makes a lot of sense. And you said you grew up on a farm, but you were always into medicine. Was your family really into like the health space, or was this like you were totally like the black sheep of the family? Like they're like, we don't even know where he got this drive for being in medicine from.
Yeah, no, that was my dad was a businessman, and this was there was nothing in my family that led me to that. It was just an interest that I had. I always enjoyed the human body, you know, exercising, sports, fitness, all that kind of stuff. Just thought, you know, I think medicine might be a good fit for me.
Yeah. I would love to talk about, you mentioned that you were struggling with back pain, and a little bit of why you got into your field was the fact that you had your own back pain. I feel like, I mean, I honestly can think of so many people in my life, my husband included, who struggles with back pain. And I think that's a really great place to start is, why do so many people struggle with, you always hear like the top ones, like it's back pain or sciatica pain or some sort of like lower body pain. Why do so many of us struggle with back pain of some sort?
Yeah, well, what I've come to realize is back pain is so common because it's so commonly misunderstood. And if we really understood the roots of back pain, there wouldn't be so much of it. So it all really has to do with how you're using your body. So just to back up a little bit, when I was in PT school, I mean, I was really looking forward to learning. There must be a secret, right? There must be some secret that physical therapists are taught. There was no secret. And when I graduated from PT school and started working in an orthopedic clinic, I did really well with acute injuries, you know, post-surgeries, all that kind of stuff. But I failed at solving chronic pain issues. Those tools for acute issues did not apply to chronic pain issues. And I was sunk into a real deep depression for several years, Megan, because here I was, I spent all this time, I really felt like physical therapy was it for me. And here I am, a complete failure at it, because there were far more people that came to me with chronic issues than with acute issues, right? And I couldn't help them. And then eventually I moved to Denver and worked at an elite health club downtown here. And my schedule was instantly filled with people with chronic and nagging pain issues. And here I thought, you know, they were young people, they were well-to-do, they had plenty of money, had been to everyone. No one was solving chronic pain issues. And so that's when I realized, oh, it's not just me. It's how we're approaching chronic pain in medicine in general. So that's when I really decided to step back and try and figure all of this out.
Well, I think it's something that, I mean, I, like I was saying, I know personally so many people that have some sort of chronic pain of some kind. It usually seems to be like sciatica or back pain. Mm. And it seems to me that a lot of, you know, people go into their medical doctors or their family doctors, and it's like, here's some Percocets, here's some OxyContin to deal with it. Mm. They're not addressing the root cause of the pain. And I even remember when it first happened to my husband 6 years ago. And I remember that her saying, oh, don't worry about it, sweetheart. Like, you know, here's a prescription for OxyContin. And I said to her, I was like, but why does he have this pain? Like, what's going on here? Like, just you're giving him something to deal with it, the pain, but why does he have this pain in the first place? And the answer is always like, it's so common. A lot of people have it. Who knows where it came from? Is there, you said there's no like secret sauce to, how to deal with any of this. What are some maybe common things that we do in our daily life that are contributing to back pain? In your opinion, is it like a slow burn? Like it's this constant little things that we do over a period of time that lead to it? Or in some cases, like I can appreciate, if someone's like in a car accident or, they hurt themselves in an injury on a work site, but like, is that more common, or is it the slow burn of things that we're doing daily that contribute to it?
Well, your question is spot on, and you're absolutely right. It's both, really. So what happens is there's a slow burn, and then there's a straw that breaks the camel's back. And so what I like to do. So in my journey, I discovered I looked in various places to find my answers, and one of those was Dr. Shirley Sarman out of Washington University in St. Louis. She studied biomechanics and movement impairments as they relate to chronic pain. She identified three common patterns of issues, biomechanical issues that cause almost all back pain. Well, I did really well with that information. That helped a lot of people, but then there were more difficult patients that started knocking on my door. And that's so I had to look further away from or further into other information. And that's when I discovered Thomas Meyer's work with fascia. And he identified superhighways of fascia that are running through the body from head to toe. Right. And then those, a lot of those superhighways of fascia corresponded to what Dr. Shirley Sarman found with her biomechanical. I'm just like, there's something going on here. So I used that information to help me start looking further away from where people were having pain as the source of their pain. And so then the next tier of patients started knocking on my door, and these people seemed to have a battery that was supercharging their body to be locked into these fascial patterns and these biomechanical patterns. And I could break it, but then it would come back the next day. I'm just like, what is going on here? And so that's when I discovered Thomas Hanna's work. And he studied neurological basis of neural tension in the body. Well, guess what? He identified the exact same three patterns as Dr. Shirley Sarman and Thomas Myers. All three different researchers in three different fields of study, all finding the same three patterns. And my head nearly exploded when I finally put all of it together. So what I felt that they were all missing was why these patterns are occurring in our body. And that was has been what I've been figuring out for the past 20 years or so. So I can take you, I would like to take you through a test to show you what one of the patterns are. We can talk about two of them because you brought up back pain and sciatica, and there's a couple different patterns that cause those things to happen. Does that sound good?
Yeah, no, I would love if you could go through these patterns with us.
Sure,
That would be
sure.
great.
So one of the patterns is called an extension pattern, and that basically means that the spine is too arched. So I'm going to take you through a little test to for you to determine whether this is part of your pattern of pain, okay, and your listeners. So what I'm going to ask everyone to do is just lie down on the floor with your legs straight. Now, I say the floor because a firmer surface is better, but if you can't get on the floor for whatever reason, on a couch is fine, on your bed is fine, but the floor will give you more feedback. Okay. So lying down, and really, folks, if you have back pain, rather than just listening to this, it's more meaningful if you actually do it. Because when you do it, you're going to feel the truth of your back pain with this test. Okay. So we're lying down with your legs straight. You can put your hand underneath your low back if you want and feel the space there and all that. Get a sense for how your back feels here. Now we're going to bend your knees so that your feet are flat on the floor. And if you don't feel a change in your back pain there, go ahead and hug the knees to your chest. And one of these two positions, you'll feel a difference in your back, right? And so you can slide your hand underneath your back if you want to, but you'll definitely notice that when your knees are bent, your back is flatter. And when your legs are straight, your back is more arched. Megan, I bet you probably know which pattern is going to cause more pain.
I would think it would be the arch in the back.
Correct, with the legs straight, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So 99% of people with back pain, this is one of the patterns that's causing their pain. The back is too arched. And if we can, and part of that answer is, oh, if I just make the back flatter, I'll feel better. Yeah, but that's not the whole answer. So let's take the second part of this test. Now, everyone stand up and listen to Megan for the next 5 minutes. And so what you'll notice is after a couple of minutes, you'll notice that your knees start to lock backwards in a straight position. Okay. And now feel, so, and if it hasn't started yet, go ahead and lock the knees straight back and feel how your back feels here. Now, go ahead and unlock the knees ever so slightly and feel what just happened to your back. And if you're not sure, lock the knees one more time and you'll feel that when your knees are locking, your back is more arched and you'll actually feel more tension in your back when you do this. So what have we learned? We've learned that when your back is more arched, you have more pain. Your back feels better when it's flatter. Now we've also learned that the way that you stand, if you stand for more than 2 or 3 minutes, you tend to lock your knees. And locking the knees is arching the back. Unlocking the knees is flattening the back. So if you just stop locking your knees, you will remove a significant hammer that's hammering your back. And it's not only when you're standing, it's also when you're walking. Most people walk with their knees locked. And so what this does, if you take 10,000 steps a day, that's 10,000 little hammers hammering on your back. So I know this seems really too simple to be true. But if I've given this recommendation to just unlock knees and to so many of my back pain patients, and within 2 or 3 days, 50, 75% better, just with this one simple change in their behavior. So that's the one pattern that's causing most central back pain.
I have a question about that. Why do we tend to lock our knees so much? Because I feel like I was very lucky enough when I was taking my yoga teacher training, we actually had 2 physical therapists in our class, and they did some of these exercises with us as part of, you know, their background with everything. And I feel like if I look at somebody with locked knees, it immediately, I'm like, oh my God, that looks so uncomfortable. Like, but I know that so many of us do that. So like, is it just because our bodies are designed to do it? Is it because we think it's not as painful? Like, I feel like in my head I go, well, if we know what's causing back pain, why would we do it? But so many of us do it. And I notice it even too, if I'm teaching in-person yoga, I'm like, man, so many people stand like so rigid and like with their knees locked.
Yeah, there's a couple different reasons. So I want to distinguish locking the knees straight as opposed to hyperextending the knees backwards. All right. Of course, if you hyperextend the knees backwards, that's considered locking the knees. But you don't need to be hypermobile in order to lock your knees. You just need to lock them, you know, push them back a little bit. So there's a couple things that go into this. One is it's an energy conservation move. When you lock your knees, you no longer have to use your leg muscles to hold you up. Now you stand on your joints. And if you stack those joints, it's effortless, right? So it's an energy conservation move. And so a lot of women, when they become pregnant and the fetus grows and they get heavier, they begin locking their knees to withstand this, right? Well, not only is that, you know, turning off their muscles and conserving their energy, but it's also causing their back to arch more, which is why a lot of women who have had children end up having back pain and sciatic issues, all right? Because they develop this habit, but they don't undo the habit, because they don't realize that it is one of the causes of their back pain. It's a very subtle thing. Now, the other thing is you've probably encountered a lot of people with anxiety, depression, stress, and so forth, right? So anxiety is one of the psychological phenomena that causes us to lock our knees, because it is a stress response. When you talk to people and like they're alert and anxious, they tend to be super tall, lock their knees, and they're always kind of have this tension pattern built into their bodies. If you imagine walking through the woods and you're not feeling safe and you hear a little crack, you're going to stand up and look around like this, right? Well, one of that whole pattern of behaviors is to lock the knees to make you taller so you can see what's going on. So locking the knees is also tied to an emotional response as well from that standpoint. And then lastly, when we walk, walking is actually the biggest thing. So one of the things that causes us to lock our knees when we're walking is the fact that we wear shoes with large heels on. And so that allows us to have a stronger heel strike. Well, when we wear those shoes, it allows our foot to come out in front of us and strike the heel down harder. When that happens, the knee locks backwards. Then the knee stays locked as our body passes over that foot. In which case there's no muscular involvement It's not demanding anything to turn on in our body, really. Okay. Really, when we walk, what we should be doing is when our foot is advancing, the whole body should be advancing with the foot, so that when the foot strikes, the body is over the foot and the knee is soft. It'll happen automatically. If your body is over the foot at foot strike, the knee will automatically be soft. All the muscles will turn on in the whole lower body chain and back and pelvic chain that should be, and that will solve a lot of the problems.
Okay, that totally makes sense. It's funny you brought up pregnancy, and I'm 5 months pregnant. And
congratulations.
Thank you very much. But the one thing I was reading about at this point, and as I get, you know, bigger and things happen, is the fact that, yes, like as we grow a little bit bigger, we can start to like arch the back to kind of compensate. And so this book of mine had like a exercise to do in, you know, use the mirror to make sure. But it's like, I already noticed it. I find I do tend to like arch my back a little bit more. I feel like I'm more mindful of it because I know that I do it. But yeah, it's almost unconscious. And I guess because there's no like immediate sensation of pain that you're like, oh, like it's fine. Like it's not bothering me. Why change it? But I do find if I stand in the mirror and look sideways, I'm like, man, like try to like soften that back, try to like tilt or tuck the pelvis a little bit more to find that straight back. But it's, yeah, I guess because there's no like immediate, like, ooh, that hurts, that you just keep going with it. And I can see how that would compound over time.
Yeah. Well, the answer would be then to unlock your knees more.
Okay.
Cause tucking the pelvis is an unnatural solution. Okay. It works, right, to flatten the back, but it's not a natural thing. We don't want to walk around with our pelvis tucked, right? But we can walk around with our knees softer, okay, and that will unlock the pelvis from its anterior tilt, right?
Okay.
And so the other thing, I mean, you bring up a great point, and that it is a slow burn, like your original question. You know, and, you know, that growth is slow, so your body's change is slow, and this is why back pain is so common and women who are pregnant. And then when they have the baby and the back pain goes away, the assumption is that all the problems are gone now, right? But they're not. In fact, I wrote a back pain during pregnancy book that showed that 6 months after this woman delivered her baby, her back shape was still in the same shape as it was when she was carrying the baby, which was different than what she was prior to carrying the baby. So a lot of these changes sneak up on us and we're not aware of them because they're not causing pain.
I would also love, I feel like you're a great person to ask this too. And I'm thinking in my perspective of like, you know, carrying a baby, but I also know people tend to do this when they favor a side, is like that hip pop where they kind of stand and they lean towards one side a little bit more. Is that I would assume that would be contributing to back pain and, you know, all of that fun lower body pain, but is that one of the main causes? Is that I personally feel like I now notice people, I'm like, they tend to favor a side a little bit more and they tend to pop a hip a little bit more when they're standing.
Yeah. So what you're touching on now is a second pattern of issues that causes most back pain and sciatica. So this is a pattern that causes unilateral back pain on one side, or sciatic pain or SI joint pain. So I'll describe what this is. So when you jut your hip over to the side, like you were talking about, what happens is one of the sides of the pelvis ends up being higher than the other side. And so also typically what happens is the same side of the rib cage is lower. So this creates a pattern like this. So where for your listeners, I'm holding up the right side of the pelvis higher than the left side and the right rib cage is lower than the left side. So there's more compression on the right side of the spine. I call this a side bending problem, okay, where the pelvis is higher and the rib cage is lower. So what happens is this becomes a habitual pattern, and you get gradual compression of all of the nerve roots and discs on this side, which then, of course, the nerve roots comprise the sciatic nerve running down the leg. So that's why a lot of sciatic pain occurs, because of this kind of compression. So it not only happens when you just shift your weight over to one leg, and it's okay to shift your weight over to one leg if you also shift it over to the other side periodically too, and ultimately unlock your knees. But really, one of the biggest causes of this pattern is of an older problem on this leg. 80 to 90% of the cases of side bending problems on the right are due to some old injury on the right leg that hasn't been resolved correctly. And so when we're born with these reflexes hardwired into our bodies. And one of them is called the withdrawal reflex. So you can watch videos of this online where you have people putting down little baby's feet on a surface and the baby jerks their foot up. Okay. Well, it's not just this that jerks up. It's the whole side of the body that's contracting to withdraw that foot from that unpleasant stimulus. All right. So as we grow, of course, our conscious mind overrides these reflex patterns because we can't go through life reflexively responding to everything, right? We have to just deal with things. So, but it doesn't mean that the reflex patterns are gone. They're just overridden for the most part. Well, one of the things that triggers the reflex pattern is an injury, because you're telling your brain, look, I need to get from A to B, and your brain has to figure out how to do that. Well, if you've got an old injury, it's not going to feel, your brain doesn't want to experience that pain. So it's going to do some kind of compensation pattern to get off of that painful issue. So what does it do? Well, it taps into its old friend, the withdrawal reflex pattern. So the same muscles that are pulling up that pelvis to unload that leg also attach the rib cage. And so they also pull the rib cage down to create this side bending pattern. In 10 or 20% of the cases, it's due to a compensation pattern from the other side.
That makes a lot of sense. What would be that third pattern that you're talking about? So we have the lateral locking the knees, and then you had mentioned there's a third pattern that people tend to do.
Yeah, the third pattern I find is very rare, and that's why I rarely discuss it, but it's the opposite of the extension pattern. It's a flexion pattern. Okay. So, but in terms of back pain, this is a very rare source of back pain, probably 1% or less of people have this pattern of issues. That's why I rarely talk about it. 99% have the extension. And if you have a unilateral pain of some sort, then you've likely also got the side bending problem too.
Perfect. Okay. So let's say somebody's come to you and they're like, I've got chronic back pain or sciatica pain or some sort of pain going on. Are there natural treatments that you do with them as they're in it? Because I feel like I do want to talk about preventative measures, but I feel like most people respond when like there's red flags, and when it's too late, they're like, I'm in pain now, what can I do? What are some of these natural techniques that you use with your clients or that you suggest for people? You had mentioned unlocking the knees. Are there other things that you think can really help somebody help to eliminate their pain that they have?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's all sorts of things. So once you understand the pattern that is causing people's pain, it's easy to solve the pattern. So, I mean, but the pattern isn't just about locking your knees when you're standing and walking. It's how you're getting up from a chair. It's how you're sitting down in a chair. It's how you're sleeping. It's how you roll over. It's how you lift weights. It's how you do your yoga. You know, it's everything that you do is likely feeding that pattern of issues. So once you understand that, oh, you know what? I have this pattern where my back is arching too much, and I understand that that's causing my pain. Okay, what? And then you say, oh, and I have a lot of pain when I'm bending over. So that must mean that I'm arching my back too much when I'm bending over. What can I do to solve that phenomenon? It's pretty easy, right? Once you understand how to look at what's happening, you can say, oh, well, if I keep my back flatter and I bend over, do I feel better? Yes. Oh, I'm just not going to arch my back anymore when I bend over. So bending over is another biggie that triggers a lot of pain. So a lot of people say, oh, I have pain when I bend over. But really what it's not when they're bending over. Most people are bending over and they have no pain at all. It's when they're coming up that they have pain. And that's a completely different movement than bending over. All right. Usually bending over, most people are just like, oh, man, that feels great on my back. Right. And then when they come up, they're just like, oh, that's where the pain happens. Why is this happening? Because we've been trained in health and wellness to, oh, you need to keep your back locked and come up like this and use your legs to pull yourself up. Well, if you lock your back into extension to come up, then you're activating that whole extension pattern and locking it in place. And look, there's only one or two vertebrae that get to move in that situation. Doesn't it make sense to articulate the entire spine to bend down and articulate the entire spine to come back up, rather than just having it hinge on one or two levels. Those kinds of things are what's causing a lot of the pain. And the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is, so we found in that first test that when your legs are straight, your back hurts more because it's more arched. And then we found out that when you're standing and you unlock your knees, your back is less arched. So what does that really tell us? What it's telling us is that the forces coming from your legs are actually the cause of your back pain. It's not your back. Because the legs, by unlocking the knees, changes the forces that are acting on the pelvis. If you change those forces, it removes the stress from the back. And that's why things further away from where we're thinking about is likely actually the cause of your pain. So in the case of extension problems, when the thighs become too tight, right, the front of the thighs, they attach into the front of the pelvis here. So when they become too tight, they pull the pelvis down. Well, when they pull the pelvis down, it causes the back to arch. So you can have symmetrical tightness, or you can have asymmetrical tightness, especially if you have a bias in how you're training, or you have an old injury or something like that. Well, if you have an asymmetrical bias or tightness in your thigh, then it's causing one side of the pelvis to tilt forward more than the other, which introduces rotation and torque into the whole pelvic system, causing SI joint pain and sciatic pain too.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. One of the things I guess I wanted to ask is, you're very much into the fitness world, you were saying. Is there anything that we, like in an ideal world, for somebody to prevent any sort of chronic pain or maybe to treat it, when it comes to physical activity or exercise? I know you said, you know, it's something as simple as like bending over, it's coming up. But when it comes to physical activity, is there... I want people to practice yoga so many days a week. I want them to also lift weights. Like, because I feel like you see these people who are like the dancers of the world, right? They're dancers. They're super flexible. They tend to only focus on flexibility type of training. And so in my opinion, they're actually very weak because they're not doing any sort of strength. But then you also have these bodybuilders in the gym and they're strength training every day. They're lifting weights and there's no flexibility. Is there, in your experience, an ideal amount of exercises that we should be doing on a weekly basis that would help us stay in optimal health to prevent chronic pain?
Well, I love your question. And it's exactly what I like to say, is that flexible people love to stretch to solve their pain, and strong people love to strengthen to solve their pain. I just think it's fascinating. So really what you need to do, if you're a person who does a lot of lifting, you need to introduce more flexibility. And those of you who are uber flexible, you need to introduce some more strength training. But it's not really that simple, because if you have pain, what you've done is you've established a pattern of usage in your body that is causing your pain. That's your habitual unconscious pattern of movement. You will take that to your yoga. You will take that to your strengthening. You will take that to your cardio. You will take that to your work. And so you have to understand the pattern that's causing your pain. It can't be as simple as, oh, I just need to strengthen more. Because like what we just talked about with, what if you have an extension problem and you're a really flexible dancer or yoga person, and you decide, oh, okay, well, I'm going to start doing deadlifts. And then you start doing deadlifts and you're locking your back like this. Well, that's not changing anything. In fact, it's deepening the pattern of issues that's causing your pain. So you have to understand the patterns. And this is what, I've created these downloadable home programs to help people solve their pain. And so, the questions I get is, well, I have spinal stenosis, or I have a disc herniation, or I have spinal dysesthesis, or I have this or that, or facet joint, I have sciatica. All of those manifestations are due to the same pattern of problems. So this is what I've learned. I owned a physical therapy clinic for about 10 years, and I saw this huge volume of people, and I'm just like, oh, I get it. So the person with spinal stenosis doesn't have a different pattern than someone with spondylolisthesis. It's just manifesting in their body differently because of their genetics, their work history, their exercise history, you know, all sorts of things, their recreational behaviors, all sorts of things. So there's all sorts of reasons why it's going to, the same pattern would manifest in you as back pain, but someone else's sciatic pain. But if we, it's the same pattern. So if we just solve the pattern, then we solve the pain, no matter how it's expressed in your body. So that's why, you know, it would be lovely if it was a simple answer of, you know, what's the best mix? The best mix really is first understanding what your pattern is that's causing your pain. Like, do you have this extension pattern? Do you have this side bending pattern? Because likely, if you just go and do something without that awareness, you're going to deepen that pattern unconsciously because you're not aware of that it exists.
I feel like I'm going to have to talk to you after this or get some sort of input, because it's the one thing you brought up was the deadlifts. And I find I feel okay doing it, but something in my head goes, I don't know if this is like the right type of movement. And, you know, I love that there's so much online stuff now. You know, I can really appreciate not everybody has benefits or they can go to a gym and afford it. So, you know, I love that people are at home or doing things. But there's also part of me goes, man, I feel like if I had somebody here who's telling me you're doing this a little bit wrong, like I have my husband who's like, I'm like, am I like, is my back flat as I'm doing this? Like something just instinctively feels like maybe I'm not doing it correctly. And he's like, ah, you look like the girl on the computer screen who's doing it. So, you know, I guess, is there any sort of, when people are working out and doing things like that, like if they instinctively know that there's something wrong, in your opinion, is it like stop doing that? Or is it like start to look at your patterns? Like maybe I am unconsciously locking my knees while I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's break this down logically, Megan. All right. We've just talked about this extension pattern, this pattern of too much arch in your back as being a primary contributor to back pain. All right. You are 5 months pregnant. You are developing more and more arch in your back. Your baby grows, right? And now you're talking about doing deadlifts, which do what? You have to lock your back into an arch position to do them.
Right. Okay.
So you may be doing the exercise absolutely correctly, just like the girl on the video or whatever, just like your trainer has told you, all that kind of stuff. But is it the right exercise for you at this point in your life? Well, no, because you're already heading down that road of too much arch in your back and you would only be reinforcing it. And the assumption people think is, oh, I've got back pain. I've got to strengthen my back. And I never do back strengthening exercises with people with back pain. I never do core strengthening exercises with people with back pain, because it's like, if you think of the back, all right, as responding to other problems, right? It's just saying, hey man, there's too much stress here. So if look at the lever arm of the leg, look at that huge long lever arm. All right. So does it make sense for me to look right here and try and solve something right in this tiny little space? Or does it make sense for me to solve the lever arm that's acting on that space? Right. That's what people need to learn to understand, is that our bodies, I mean, if you stand up and you put a hand on your back and you march in place, you'll feel your back muscles changing. If you raise one arm up, you'll feel your back muscles changing. So our bodies are huge lever arms acting on our spine. It's not these little elements of the spine that are the problem. It's the forces we're, you know, directing to those aspects that's the problem. So that would be my answer to you is, you're probably doing it correctly, you know, but is it the right thing for you to do based on where you are in life right now? And that's what people need to, we need to get this program out of our head that, oh, my pain is because I'm weak. Oh, my pain is because I'm, you know, inflexible. Well, that may be true, but where are you weak? Is it really your back that's the problem? Or is it your butt? Am I inflexible? Is it my hamstrings or is it my thighs? you know, or my calves. Mm-hmm. It's all that kind of stuff, you know.
As you're speaking, at like an analogy, I guess, that kind of came to my head is like, it's almost like, and I don't love the term, but like a diet, right? Like some people are like, oh, like I have to do, like, it's a lower body exercise days. I follow this person that we do all the lower body stuff. But there's, you're an individual person, right? Like you have to make the tweaks and the changes, the modifications that suit your body, just like you would if you were following a certain diet. Like I hate those blanket diet type of approaches, because I'm like, are you male, female, overweight, underweight? Are you intolerant to a certain food? Are you, like, there's so many different facets that go into it that I feel like, as you're speaking, I'm like, in my head, I feel like a lot of people don't associate all those different facets when it comes to physical exercise. They just go, well, I'm doing physical exercise, I must be doing something good for myself.
And 99% of the right time, they would be absolutely correct. It's only when you're having pain that you're not correct. Right. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah. And so it's not terribly complicated, because I mean, I wouldn't have been able to create these programs that solve patterns and then solve pain. Right. So if everyone was so individualistic, you know, to solve every little thing, you don't have to solve every little thing. You just have to solve the big picture things, right? Like, oh, I'm going to do a lot of exercises that make my back arch more, right? Well, that doesn't make sense, because back arching is, you've just identified one of the reasons you're having back pain, right? Why would you do more back arching? So that's what's hard for people to wrap their minds around. And really, it once they hear it, they're just like, well, that makes perfect sense, right? But the problem is, in our health and wellness fields, we have not learned to think of things in this way. So this is gets down to, you know, what I was trained to do in physical therapy school was component thinking. You isolate a tissue, you test that tissue, it's damaged, here's how we're going to treat that tissue. Well, that works really well for acute issues. And, you know, acute strains, post-surgical, all that kind of stuff. But with chronic issues, that does not apply. You need systems thinking to apply to chronic issues, because it has to do, the very fact that it's chronic means that there is an underlying issue that has not been resolved yet, because our body's natural state is to be pain-free. And we have all the tools within our bodies to be pain-free. If you cut your finger, it heals. If you break a bone, it mends. So we have all of these internal processes to heal our body. If we're having pain, it means that there is some barrier or obstacle that we have put in the way that is causing that tissue not to heal correctly. It usually has to do with how we're using our bodies. That's the unconscious. These unconscious movement patterns are the barriers. And so my programs help you figure out what those are, solve those. And it's not only the movement patterns, those movement patterns like locking the knees has now caused tight or weak muscles to occur, right? But if I stretch or strengthen those tight or weak muscles, but I don't solve the movement pattern that's causing them, then the pain's going to come back the next day. This is what we're missing in our fields, I believe.
Is there anything that might be like an uncommon treatment in your experience or your opinion that works for people who are in chronic pain? So we were talking about physical exercise and what to do, but is there anything like, you know, I want people to start doing some breathing exercises because people who are in chronic pain tend to shallow breathe and breathe through their lungs. Is it, you know, instead of sitting down in a chair, I want people to sit on a medicine ball. Is there anything that's like not maybe a common thought or practice that you think would really help somebody who's in chronic day-to-day pain?
Well, yeah, it's everything. Everything that I recommend is unlike most people, because most practitioners are looking at it from this component thinking standpoint. Oh, we've got to strengthen your core. Oh, we've got to strengthen your back. Oh, we got to stretch your hamstrings. No, those things may be problems, but those aren't the cause of your pain, right? And so really, you have to understand first why you're having pain. You know, it's difficult to wrap your mind around because we're so ingrained. You know, everyone is trained to say, okay, what exercises are going to solve my back pain? Well, it depends on why your back pain is happening, right? Well, thankfully, I've kind of drilled it down into two primary patterns of issues that are causing your back pain. There's these extension problems and these side bending problems. So you mentioned, I mentioned earlier that the side bending pattern is occurring because of some old injury, usually to the same side leg. So then you can think, well, okay, I'm having all this sciatic pain, but this guy's saying it's maybe due to some old injury in my leg that's on that same side. So do I have an old injury on that same side? Oh yeah, I broke my ankle like 12 years ago. And well, yeah, I can run on it, but I know it doesn't work quite as well as my other one. Ding, ding, ding. Then you have to start looking at that old ankle injury and really make it work like the other one to solve the side bending problem that it is creating. Right? So I wish there isn't a blanket, you know, there. I wish there was, but there's not a blanket thing that I ask people to do other than start the things that are causing your pain. Hold the secrets to what's going to solve your pain. Think of your pain as a teacher. Your body is trying to teach you something. And when you're having pain during certain activities, that's when your teacher's saying, here's the problem. You've got to start breaking that down. And the problem is we haven't had the framework to break it down before because we're all thinking in this component way, not a systems way. When you think of things in a systems way, it's so easy to identify why people are having pain and how to solve it.
Is there any time that you think where medication or surgery is an final option? You know, like, again, if someone's in a major car accident, I can totally appreciate that. But if someone's like, I've been doing physical therapy, I'm in chronic pain, you know, I've had all these testing done and, you know, they say it's like a blown out disc or like my ankle was totally screwed up from an injury I had a long time ago. And there's like, it grew in a weird way and now it'll be like, it'll never be able to be properly fixed again. Like, is there any point where you're like, I actually do think surgery and or medication might be a viable option? As long as you do practice these natural techniques that will help you heal and prevent chronic pain going any further?
Absolutely. I am not anti-surgery. I am not anti-medication. But only if you've already figured out whether you actually need it or not. So case in point, I recently just had two women who downloaded my hip pain program. They were scheduled for hip replacements. Within 2 weeks, they were completely pain-free. They had already been to a slew of other professionals to solve their hip pain, and no one could solve it. So this is why surgery is often recommended is, oh, physical therapy didn't work, chiropractic hasn't worked, massage hasn't worked, you know, oh, well, I guess it's time for surgery. Because the surgeon is just saying, hey, nothing seems to be working, okay, I'll use my tool. Most surgeons don't even want to have surgery for most people. It's not like they're pushing for surgeries. It's just that when you've exhausted all the other avenues, surgery is your only option or medications are your only options. But this is the problem is because all of those people have been treated with this component thinking approach. That's why their pain isn't being solved. That's then why they need surgery. And that's then why often surgeries fail. 6 months or a year later, your pain comes back because you haven't solved the underlying reasons for the breakdown in your body in the first place. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes sense. I think of, you know, I do feel like there's a lot more good surgeons and doctors out there than not that, in my opinion, like, we'll try to be like, okay, what's the like root cause? What is actually going on in your life that's contributing this rather than just jumping to the surgery bandwagon? But you do often hear, like, I mean, I even have friends my age, you know, in their early 30s, late 30s that are like, you know, I had to go this route of surgery. My husband is included in that. Like, he's tried everything and they're like, you know, maybe surgery is the correct way to go. And part of me goes, but is it like, is it solving a problem? Like, I hate listening to those people who are like, yeah, I had surgery so many years ago and I'm 10 years later, I'm back in the same thing. I'm like, so it didn't solve the problem. Like, I just, you know, I'm not an expert in this field. So, and you hear all these different people who have gone through it, you know, surgery, it helped save my life. It opened up doors that I didn't have. And then you also hear about the bad side of things and you're like, who is like, what is the right thing to do? And I guess unless you're a doctor yourself where you go like, that's a problem that will just never be fixed on its own. It needs a little help. Like, I feel like a lot of people would just wouldn't know what the right thing to do is, right? You'll hear a doctor say something and you go, okay, that must be truth. They're a doctor. They know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Well, understand that doctors have had very little musculoskeletal training, right? I've treated many doctors and they're just like, yeah, we had maybe a month or two of I mean, I kind of know the names of some of the muscles and, but they don't understand these relationships, right? And I'm not dissing them because they have to know so much and they have like 4 minutes to work with you, right? For an appointment. How can they possibly drill down into all the musculoskeletal causes of pain? It's not their responsibility, right? That's why they're sending them to physical therapy or chiropractic or whatever to solve that, because they have the training to do that. So, you know, I don't blame doctors at all. And, you know, a lot of people think that there's some surgery conspiracy happening out there. No, there's no surgery conspiracy happening. It's just because people are failing conservative approaches. Why are they failing conservative approaches? Because conservative approaches are component thinking approaches. That's why. And so one of the reasons that they're component thinking is that the gold standard for inclusion, everything has to be evidence-based when we treat patients, right? So in order to create evidence, you need to create double-blind studies to be included in research. Well, it's very difficult to create a double-blind study about how people walk, right? It's too many joints, too many muscles, too many ramifications. You can't isolate one tiny thing. So that's why systems approaches haven't really been widely researched, because it's impossible to fit into the research criteria for inclusion. So we only get to research component thinking things. We can look at one microscopic part of the body and research that. So this is why I think a lot of systems thinking approaches aren't taught. Now, Dr. Shirley Sarman has done research for decades, but a lot of people are ignoring her information. And this is because that there's a belief system in medicine or in a lot of physical therapists that in order to solve pain, I have to use my hands to solve pain. I have to manipulate something. I have to massage something. That's what's going to solve my patient's pain. So their belief system is filtering out movement-based solutions. So this is why a lot of therapists, doctors, you know, are not thinking of movement as the source of pain, because their belief systems are filtering that out. It doesn't only happen in medicine. It happens in law. Any other career you can think of, people come to it with their belief systems, you know, fitness, right? I believe yoga should solve just about everything. Everyone should be doing yoga. Well, what if there are other things that people should be doing too, right? That you're not looking at because you're ensconced in yoga. So that's a long-winded answer to that question. Sorry, went off on a tangent there.
No, it's true, right? I think too, we get something stuck in our head about, well, this is the way it's supposed to be. And it's hard to hear those, you know, other opinions or other people mm-hmm. saying different things or, you know, like, I mean, I've never had the experience of chronic pain and I can only imagine how debilitating it is. And you're just like, I just want to solve this problem. I will do anything. And, you know, I guess if someone's going, well, you could do this, like surgery seems like a quick, easy answer, but, you know, let's look at the root causes and like, let's take a look at your body and stuff. And some people like, but I want an answer now. I've been dealing with this for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. I can appreciate that would be like I just want this problem solved yesterday type of mentality.
Yeah. So let me say a couple things in response to that. So your original question was about, you know, having surgery, when should someone have it? So one of my patients that's in my upcoming book, was a guy who had two surgeries for his sciatic pain. And he had been through 8 years of surgeries, practitioners, and so forth. No one could solve his sciatic pain. We solved it in 15 seconds. We solved it because it wasn't his back, right? I just recently had another woman who used my back pain downloadable home program who didn't solve her back pain with it. And she ended up, she's going to have surgery to fix her herniated discs. All right. So what's the difference in my opinion? So in my clinic, we were the place where people came for chronic issues. And I was always very hopeful for everyone because I knew that they were only being approached from this component thinking standpoint, not from a systems approach. And I would say 90, 95% of the time, our systems approach solved pain that no one else could solve. People would avoid surgeries. But if they did not respond to the systems approach, I knew that they were a candidate for surgery because we had fixed all the systemic issues contributing to their pain. And that's why, you know, I didn't, when this woman said, you know, I think I'm going to have back surgery, you know, that's why I said, well, then good luck, because it's probably the right thing. Because if the system solution hasn't solved your pain, based on my 25 years of experience of using it to solve chronic pain, then usually it's because you really do need that surgery. Yet this other guy had two surgeries that didn't work at all, you know? And so that's, I hate to, one of the things that's difficult for me to do to get up here and talk about this stuff is to say that, oh, I have all the answers. No, I don't have all the answers. And for the most part, our component thinking approach does really great for most things that are acutely related. But when it comes to chronic pain, it's a different set of rules. And this is why there is chronic pain. And this is why I make the statement that chronic back pain happens because we have chronic misconceptions about how it, what's happening here.
Yeah. I feel like I'm using you as a like a consultation basis right now, but I feel like you're a good person to ask about this. And before I send everybody to check you out and all your offerings and stuff, I'm curious what your opinion is right now. This big trending word is like stem cell therapy. Is like, if you're in chronic pain, maybe the stem cell therapy is the way to go because it's better than surgery. And if you feel like you've exhausted your options, is this a viable thing? You know, I like off the top of my head, like I know Joe Rogan was pushing it for a little bit and there's a bunch of fighters who've talked about it. Do you think it's like, I do think it's better than surgery, but I still feel like I'm not sure about it. Or do you think it's like a viable option for people? Like, what is your stance on stem cell therapy for people in chronic pain?
Well, several people have been helped with stem cell therapy. So I can't say it's a hoax, right? Because it's truly helping some people. But it's the same thing as surgery or any other type of treatment. Are you getting stem cell therapy as a last result? And have you really tried everything? I can almost guarantee that you have not tried a systems approach to solving your pain. And if you did, you probably wouldn't need the stem cell therapy, right? And so, you know, most doctors who don't do stem cell therapy say that the evidence is anecdotal at best. This doctors who do stem cell therapy, which costs several thousand dollars for treatment, say, oh yeah, there's lots of evidence showing that this helps. Okay. So you have to be wary. It's not the end all be all for treatment. It's just like surgery, you know, it's just like any other type of treatment you might try. It's, if you're willing to spend $6,000 to try it, to see if it helps, go for it. But I can almost guarantee that you have not tried everything if you're still in pain. And like I was listening to this other podcaster and he has chronic back pain and he went to someone who was doing stem cells. He says, yeah, I got my stem cell injection and they said I have to wait 6 months to see if it works. What? Waiting 6 months to see if something's working? There's so much else that can happen in your life that you either fix or cause more of your issues. How can that be? How can you even, you know, that's impossible to say whether it worked then, you know? So I have found that when you solve problems, the pain is eliminated almost immediately. I don't care whether the pain's been around for 20 years. You can solve that pain in a week if you strike on the right issue that's causing the problems. And this looking at things from a systems approach helps you see what those causes are and address those more quickly.
I feel like I could keep talking to you about this. It's such an interesting topic for somebody like myself who I've never experienced chronic pain, but there's so many people out there who are in chronic pain. And I feel like just being told that there's hope for them, that it doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to be medicated for the rest of your life, or you don't have to do a surgery that may or may not fix the problem. Like, there are other options, especially natural ones that, you know, will really make a difference in your life. So before I send everybody to check you out online, is there a book, podcast, or resource that has brought you incredible value? It does not have to be related to chronic pain, although it can be, that you want to leave with the audience?
Well, the audience will never read this one, but what got me started was Dr. Shirley Sarman's textbooks that she wrote. One of them's been translated into 7 languages. It's pretty heavy stuff, but I've read them all, like, you know, 5 times, because they're so critical to understanding all of this stuff. So that would be the thing.
Perfect.
I would say the book.
Where can everybody check you out online if people want to just see what you're up to online? Maybe they also have chronic pain and they're like, I need to check out some of these downloadables. Where can everybody go and find you?
Yeah, rickolderman.com is where you can find me. That's where I have everything. And so I have my downloadable home program. So I've got 5, you know, one for neck and pain and headaches, one for back pain and sciatic pain, one for hip pain, knee pain, and foot pain. And so I've also created a practitioner's training course. So if you are a health and wellness practitioner who want to study and learn this systems approach to identifying and solving pain, this is the training that I gave all of my therapists in my clinic to teach them how to do it. And you can look at their testimonials, but they're just like, I can't believe how simple it is to solve chronic pain. And it's just a shift in thinking. I've also got an upcoming book called Solving the Pain Puzzle. These are cases based on my 25 years as a physical therapist. That's about to be released soon. And there are free chapters from that book on my website. And you can sign up to pre-order the book there. It should be coming out, I'm hoping in the next month or two. One of my goals is to be the first physical therapist on the New York Times bestsellers list. So please pre-purchase a book if you can. About 10 to 15 years ago, I wrote a series of other books called the Fixing You series of books to help people solve their pain. Those are all available on Amazon. You can see the links there. But the downloadable home programs are the most current version of those books. And it's much like, for instance, my back pain book, I have maybe like 80 different exercises in there to solve all sorts of things. But over these 10 years of owning the clinic, I've really narrowed that down to like 7 exercises. Here's the 7 things that you can do that will solve almost all back and sciatic pain. So it's much more condensed.
Perfect. Perfect. And yeah. If somebody is in Colorado, do you do virtual? Do you do in-person work at your clinic with people?
Oh, sure. So I sold my clinic last year. So I'm just doing telehealth visits now. I've got a non-compete clause that I'm constrained by right now. So I can do telehealth visits with people. And frankly, what I tell people is, look, you know, just about everything that I would tell someone in a telehealth visit are already found in my home programs. Perfect. So save yourself a lot of money and just go to the home program and do that. And if you need a telehealth visit after that, then do that. But most people do not need a telehealth visit with me to solve their pain.
I love it. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I will make sure that everything is linked in the show notes. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge and your expertise with everyone.
Thank you, Megan. And great questions. You were right spot on with, you know, where you're coming from. So thank you.
If you love this podcast episode, spread the love by sharing this with your friends and family, share it out on social media, and don't forget to give it a 5-star rating and review. From the bottom of my heart, I am so grateful that you are here. Until next time.